Welcome to the Fansmanship.com podcast, coming to you from San Luis Obispo, California.
Hot stuff.
Say what?
Welcome back to the Fansmanship.com podcast. We're here today. It is Friday the 13th, the 13th of April, 2012. We have our fantasy baseball guru, commissioner, Jesse Pereira, in the house today with me, Owen Main. Jesse, how's it going?
Pretty good.
Very good. I am headed out of town, out of the country tomorrow, so I wanted to get in one last fantasy baseball podcast for the next couple weeks. And so
where
here
you
we
headed?
Are. I'm headed to Honduras.
Honduras.
Central America.
Are you scouting future players?
No, I don't think there's future baseball players there as much as future soccer players, probably. It's not like Panama or Nicaragua where you could find the occasional Dennis Martinez.
Do you mean Nicaragua?
Nicaragua. Yes. And so here we are. It is the end of the second week, basically, of the fantasy baseball season. And there's some fun stuff going on. And, Jesse, how's your team doing?
What's
your team called?
We're the Wicked Googlies, and we are staring 0-2.
With those Wicked Googly eyes.
You know, this is how I started out last year. It's not the end of the world, but, it's annoying.
And
frustrating.
I had a thought today about your team, and it had to do with one of the players on my team. And
is this another trade?
No. Well, I had Ryan Braun on my squad. I have him on my squad. I traded, if you remember, and I don't know if I made this trade since our last one, but I traded Matt Kemp, and I got in return Ryan Braun and Andre Ethier from Evan. So I thought I did pretty good on that one. And Al Melchior from CBS Sports backed me up on it on Twitter, which I felt, you know, validated about. I don't know why I need that validation, but apparently I do. So I wanted to quickly.
Well, you know, Kemp for Braun is pretty much straight up. It's the Ethier part that
that's pretty rad.
Ethier has his career year,
which he may be,
which he's on
having
his way to.
If he doesn't get hurt, and I think he's an injury risk, but so was Jason Worth, and Worth is the player that I flipped for a pitcher because I had that I got an extra outfielder there. But my epiphany was that Ryan Braun is essentially your mascot. He has the googly eyes. Dude's eyes.
Yeah, for people who aren't familiar with my team, I basically have the money logo that Geico had
about a year and a half ago.
Yeah, a year and a half ago. That had that that song.
What song was that, Jesse?
I'm not going to sing it. No.
Well, what was it called? Come on.
You know, I can look it up and we can play it later. But basically, yeah.
Jesse's not going to sing for us.
No,
today.
I'm not going to. It has the money with the wicked with the googlies on it, and I took it into a paint program and scribbled some mean eyebrows on it. So.
Yeah, and it looks pretty intense, I must say. So Ryan Braun's basically. If you ever get Ryan Braun on your team, he's basically your mascot, I think. Yeah, have you ever seen his eyes at the moment of impact or as he's fielding a fly ball?
Yeah, now that you mention it.
They're ridiculously huge.
He's, well, you know.
And probably pretty dreamy for ladies of Milwaukee. Anyway.
They're enhanced by drugs. Oh, wait, maybe not.
Well.
Wait, that's another conversation.
Actually, that was a big... you know, those of us who play fantasy, we always play it, I think, with this idea, if we're big fans of one team, we play it with this idea that somehow it would be more fun if you have players from your team because there's some intrinsic value in being able to root for them and knowing that they're improving your fantasy team, like I did with Matt Kemp last year. But I don't know if that's the case as much. I mean, I traded Kemp away and I got Braun, and I'm still feeling pretty good about it. And I think if I actually win games in fantasy, it'll be a big deal. Today we're going to talk about some players who have kind of outperformed how we think they're going to perform for the rest of the year, players who've underperformed compared to how we think they're going to perform for the rest of the year. I have a few in mind that I want to ask Jesse about. And
I'm going to talk about I'm calling it the Javi Guerra effect.
The Javi Guerra situation.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah, absolutely.
It's an odd phenomenon that has occurred with Javi Guerra.
The Guerra phenomenon. Okay. And we'll also get into the phenomenon of me buying MLB at bat this year and finally actually seeing some of these players actually play instead of just looking at them as numbers that flash up on my fantasy baseball screen. I'll talk to you about a few of those. Jesse, I want to start with this Javi Guerra phenomenon. What is it?
You know, it's funny. Nobody has noticed Javi Guerra at all. He's become undervalued because of another player being so good. And it's really odd just because basically Kenley Jansen is...
Jansen, yeah, you're right.
Is, you know, he's striking out, like I think last year he struck out 15 batters.
The Curaçao native.
Yeah, 15 batters per nine innings. And, you know, he's a converted catcher and he came up and...
Totally raw.
Yeah, very raw. So he was all over the place when he came up 2 years ago. And then last year he put it together and had just an absolutely dominant season. And everybody's basically biding their time for Kenley Jansen to be the closer of the Dodgers and has overlooked Javi Guerra.
Javi Guerra is, what is he, 5 for 5?
He's in
the... Or 6 for 6?
He hasn't pitched a full major league season yet, but in his last... He's converted 26 saves out of 29.
In his career.
In
so
his career.
Far.
I think that actually might be more than...
And he
might
got
be,
kind of thrown into the role last year, either because of Broxton's incompetence or because
Broxton's
injury. I think I think it was kind of all that happened at once with Broxton last year. And did you see Broxton did the first thing that happened in like 50 years, first time it happened. Broxton ended a baseball game by hitting two batters in a row.
Oh, yeah.
Did you see that?
It was such an odd turn of events. There was actually people posting the box score.
Yeah, it was like a Tim Kirkchen, like it was like a Tim Kirkchen's dream box score.
A ball wasn't hit out of the infield and he gave up 3 runs.
Exactly. Yeah, so that's total, you know, Broxton explosion. He did that against the Giants at least 2 or 3 times, I'm sure, in the last couple of years. But back to Guerra. So Javi Guerra is this reliever, this closer for the Dodgers, who is under the radar. All the fantasy experts coming into this year basically said he has the job until Jansen has the job. And so in the closer realm, Guerra's stock was
really
falling
low
because the idea was
for no reason.
Because the idea was that as soon as Kenley Jansen was ready to go, or as soon as Guerra faltered, and they didn't really have any evidence that he was going to falter, he just doesn't have the stuff that Jansen has. And so the idea was that Jansen would at some point just kind of magically take over. And because of that, a lot of us avoided Guerra. When we draft a closer, I know I drafted like Jordan Walden over Guerra. And that was probably, you know, looking now, I mean, Walden has like 1 save and Guerra has 5. So it doesn't look great after the first 2 weeks.
Everybody became so still is enamored. If you look at the ownership rates, Kenley.
With an A, J.
Kenley is owned in more leagues than Guerra. And, you know, if you look at his, and he's not, the fact that Jansen has been so good, nobody's even dissecting whether or not Javi can be successful in this role. And if you look at his minor league numbers, he's striking out a batter an inning, and his ERA is down in the mid twos.
Both things that you really want for a closer, right? Like you said, everybody's so excited about Jansen that they forgot about Guerra, and now that's
he's
kind
5
of biting
for 5
him. Right,
right and, out of the gate.
And if you're Don Mattingly, there's no way you stop. There's no way you get rid of or you change your closer if he's 5 out of 5, or if he's, you know, above 90%. You're not gonna change that guy.
Yeah,
during the middle of the season when your team's 6-1.
I'm in the camp.
Best start in baseball.
I'm in the camp with
Dodgers.
They were on their way to 7-1 the last I checked.
Herring struck out the first 6 or 8 batters tonight, and the way the streak ended was that Will Venable hit a home run. I've been following on Twitter.
Well, it had to happen eventually, I guess.
And that's the way it was going to happen against Terang on a home run. Sorry, yeah. So they were on their way, and they may still be.
Yeah. Well, you know, going back to what I was saying, I'm in the camp with people that say the closer is an overrated. I think you need somebody who can finish a game, but I don't think it necessarily should be your best reliever. And Mattingly may have put himself in this perfect position where he's got his best reliever to use in, you know, a more critical situation than the 9th inning with a 3-run lead and nobody on base is the 7th inning when a one-run lead and a guy on 2nd and 3rd. And then he's got his ace reliever in Jansen to come in and use in that situation. So I don't...
People have described it as like the Jabba role that the Yankees had when they were kind of, and I'm using air quotes here, grooming Jabba Chamberlain back in the day when...
For his trampoline injury?
Right, when Rivera was there, you know, he was their closer, and Jabba wasn't quite ready to be stretched out to be a starter. They would use him in relief, and that was the way they'd use him. They use him as their ace seventh inning guy. And I think... I think that's a great way to use Jansen this season. He's still very young. He's still really raw. And those guys who drafted Jansen aren't going to get saves, and they're not going to get wins. They're going to get we don't even count holds in our league.
No, but you know, I think there's a lot of value in a dominant middle reliever because they can put up innings and get you strikeouts and improve your ratios. They're not necessarily going to get you anything else, but they're going to help you with your ERA and they're going to get you strikeouts. So.
Right. And kind of switching gears here. I'm looking at our transaction sheet for our league. And one thing that strikes me, and as I listen to other fantasy baseball experts talk, a lot of them are in NL only leagues or AL only leagues. And a lot of these guys who are the so-called experts, not the ones who make money being experts, but the ones who think they're a little bit better than everybody else, kind of scoff at the mixed league format because of how many good players there are usually on the waiver wire. And to me, and I wanted to ask you about this too, to me, when I hear that kind of scoffing, I feel like actually it makes it more fun. When there are guys who may have a huge, you know, I'm looking at guys who were dropped in our league this week, even Eric Bedard.
That was me.
That was you. Loney got dropped. Torrey Hunter got dropped. Mike Moustakas got dropped.
That was also me.
That was also you. But the idea is that any one of those guys could get picked up and could have a 25 or 30 point week at any given time. I really feel like, I mean, you know, they still have that in them. And to me, that's one of these things that makes our transactions, I feel like, or when you pick up a guy or when you really go for a guy, it makes it a tough decision. And I feel like if our league was like a 14 team league, or if it was an AL only league or NL only league, you just kind of would be grasping at straws at those later, you know, for those later players. So I really, I wanted to get your take on the people who talk about, you know, mixed leagues being kind of weak sauce.
Snobs.
Yeah.
That fantasy, but I guess, you know, our league as a 10 team league is a little bit shallow, or, you know, it's easy to go out and get talent.
And we've been talking about this, two more teams in our league, a 12 team mixed league is kind of the ideal. I feel like the ideal format.
Yeah.
And hopefully we can expand in the future.
We'll see. I know there's some opposition. I'm not trying very hard. You know, I'm fine with what we have right now. 12 teams would be more fun. I actually have thought about how it would be fun, since our league is set up into two divisions. I think it would be fun if one of them was an AL and one of them was an NL.
Oh, AL only in one division, NL only in the other.
Yeah, and then we faced off at the end of the season. I think that would be fun.
Interesting.
You know, I think that's logistically would be difficult, and we've already kind of set ourselves on this path of what we have. So
sure, but that, you know, we can always blow it up. That's why you have your fantasy baseball commissioner shirt on today.
It's actually the only clean shirt I had.
We were at spring. Oh man, so you really held out to wear it. We were at spring training. Evan, who's in our league, and myself and a couple other guys, we're at spring training, and there's a CBS Sports booth, and we have co-commissioners here. So I talked him into giving me an extra shirt, and I probably would have kept it for myself if it was extra large, even though I'm not the commissioner, but it was a large. So it's more Jesse's size than mine.
Perfect. Thank you.
You're very welcome, sir. Thank you very much. That was the Moon Man. The Moon Man.
Oh,
quote.
Right, Moon Man.
Speaking of which, I'm trying to talk to the Moon Man. I'm trying to get the Moon Man on our fantasy podcast here, or on one of our podcasts.
Just to,
I think it would be pretty
like
incredible
to give a live performance of the Moon Man.
No, just to give, just to do an interview. I just want to interview the Moon Man.
I'm disappointed
or
that
Gary.
He hasn't followed up the series with
there has been
Rock
the Cloud
Man and all the different men that he could do.
Yeah, Moon Man and Cloud Man are similar. One has an accent and one doesn't. I think Cloud Man has an accent.
Cloud Man has a British accent, which really, you know, if you think about it, makes sense.
Cloud Man's really been hard on us lately. There was some lightning and thunder, and it was pouring. And when it poured, it rained again and again and again. Anyway, so yeah, Jesse, I was also wanted to talk to you, and I've been having this weird phenomenon at the beginning of this baseball season. I once again bought, or I guess this is the first time I've really bought it. It's at bat. It's the Major League Baseball, extra innings, whatever you want to call it. It's streaming baseball videos on my computer, my PlayStation, my phone, wherever I want, I can have baseball and I can watch baseball games. But something that's striking me this year is that there are players on my team, and they've been on my team, I'm realizing, for 2 or 3 years for some of them. And I've never seen them have an at bat. Not that I can remember. They're players who play on teams like the Orioles or the Mets.
Ian Kennedy, the left-hander.
Last year, before I drafted him, and I figured it out, obviously, last year, but there was a period of time where I pictured Ian Kennedy as a lefty for some reason. And I drafted him, and he was actually a keeper of mine. It's because I'm looking at the numbers. I'm not looking at the guy. Like, I'm not ever watching him pitch. And I feel like this is one of the great things about having this at-bat package. The only problem is I get blacked out in San Luis, and I don't have cable anymore, so I have to listen to it on the radio and kind of imagine it in my mind. But the other guy that struck me this year is Daniel Murphy, the second baseman, first baseman, third baseman, outfielder for the Mets, Mr. Versatility, a lot like Michael Kadire, kind of, I think. Like a young left-handed Michael Kadire. But I didn't realize Daniel Murphy hit left-handed until this year when I watched him. And he carried my fantasy team for probably like a month last year, between the time David Wright got hurt and the time he got hurt. Mm-hmm. Daniel Murphy put up stupid numbers. He was scoring 25 points a week, at least 25, 30 points in some weeks for a period of time there. And then he got hurt again, so I had to drop him. But I have him again on my team this year. And
you're welcome.
Thank you. Yeah, and I traded him for, was that the Elvis trade?
It was the Elvis trade, yeah.
So I got Daniel Murphy and D. Gordon for Elvis Andrews. I've been wheeling and dealing this year.
I think you've made 3 or 4 trades.
Three or four already, which is, I think, the most. And I'm not usually...
In league history.
I'm usually a Stan Pat kind of guy. I really am. So the other guys who I haven't, who I'd never seen, I saw Markakis hit for the first time today. I'm not ashamed to say it.
He's an underrated ball player.
I know what his numbers are, but when he stands out there left-handed, his stance is kind of doofusy. I hate to say it. He kind of just holds it out there like Mickey Tettleton. He goes Mickey Tettleton, Mike Socha, just kind of has the bat out there, kind of holds it up flat and straight, and then he gets into his hitting stance for sure. And he's, like you said, he's a solid hitter. He's underrated. I think he's had the most doubles over the last 2 or 3 years, or he's top three.
He's a doubles machine. He doesn't hit a lot of home runs.
Had a double and a sac fly today.
He's kind of
in the game I watched.
A low 2020 guy.
Totally. Totally. So anyway, that's an interesting concept. And so if you have the ability to get yourself this extra innings package, it is a fun thing to check out players. And I was actually scanning through as my players came to bat. I was switching from game to game, and that was kind of fun today.
Is that the MLB TV premium package?
It is the premium package.
For $124.99.
Apparently, yeah. So instead of paying for cable, that's what I'm paying for this year. Jesse, give me 1 or 2 or 3 players who are way overperforming what they're going to do this year. I have one in mind who's killing me this week, but don't say that one, but but give me 1 or 2 or 3 players who are overperforming so far in the 2012 season. Overperformers.
Yeah. Let's hear yours first. I'm going to have to think about it.
I have one that I believe and 2 that I think other people will agree with, but I don't want to believe. One is, Derek Jeter.
Okay.
This week, Derek Jeter has like 25 fantasy points against me and just rocking my world, rocking my socks off, as they say. And so, yeah, Derek Jeter, I don't think is going, he can't keep it up. If he keeps it up, I don't know. I don't know what I'll do, but he's aged incredibly well, I guess, as a baseball player. And I guess you can't keep him down. The 2 that I really hope aren't overperforming, the 2 that I hope are performing right on their level.
I'm guessing they're on your team.
If I'm hoping that they're performing well, can you guess which two players they might be? One of them's on my bench.
One of them's on your bench. Well, that makes it easier. David Freese.
That's affirmative.
Yeah, and that's who I think is overperforming.
I know you mention it. We've talked about it.
Now that you mention it, that's probably my number.
I think Freese is going to be
my number one overperformer.
Freese is going to go 30 and 100 and hit 320, I hope.
Yeah, I'm not convinced that D. Gordon can keep doing what he's doing, what he's been doing for the Dodgers.
Now, he's sitting out tonight. I think it's interesting. You know, he's only 22 or something. He's very young.
Mm-hmm.
And so he could play every day. He could play tonight. But I feel like he steals so many bases that he needs a night off for his scabs on his legs to heal or whatever. You know, I mean, from sliding so much. I mean, I just got to think that over the course of a year for a guy that skinny and fast, I'm interested to see how he holds up. I hope he can. It's one of the reasons why I traded for him, because I thought he could. But it's definitely a question. There's one more guy. He's a pitcher on my team.
On your team?
On my team.
On my team
in both ways, in both respects.
Oh, yeah. Billingsley was the other one that popped into my head, because Billingsley's been dominant.
He's 2-0
so far.
Yeah, he's 2-0. He's struck out a ton of guys.
He's finally blossomed.
That's what we say every year. Talk to me in July, and I'll tell you.
Yeah.
End of July. If he's still doing this by the end of July, great. You know, everybody's always thought he has the stuff to be a 15-20 game winner, the stuff to have an ERA around 3, and he just hasn't ever been able to put it together for a season. So we'll see if he can miss bats and continue to do so this year. What are some others for you?
Or
from you?
You know, I feel like the team that I'm playing right now, which is the Sunkers, Doug's team. I don't know. I just feel like everybody on his team is overperforming.
That's what I feel like about Rocky too.
50 points, and I'm looking at his team, and it's like, are you kidding me?
He's dominating you, huh?
Yeah. Chapman has 25 points.
Wow, he's got 190.
Points.
Wow.
I mean, every one of his relievers has 20 points. And that's
right, because he's got all relievers.
That's preposterous.
Doug's team is the team that drafted all relief pitchers. And so this is.
And he's off to a blazingly good start.
This is the thing about relief pitchers. You can have them on your team, and if every one of them gets 3 saves in a week, you're sitting pretty.
Yeah.
I mean, and as far as overperforming, you know, I think probably those guys are, but there's going to be weeks like that Doug has, and we just all have to, you know, ride it out, I think. Because there's also going to be weeks when he has 100 points total, maybe.
Yeah.
Because nobody gets in or whatever.
Yeah, you know, I don't know. I haven't really... Nobody's jumped out at me as huge overperformers, except a couple of Dodgers, you know, the Gordon and Billingsley. I mean, obviously the Dodgers aren't going to lose one game all year, so...
Let me ask you this question. Your feelings on a gentleman by the name of Sergio Santos.
Oh, yeah, Sergio... I can tell you guys that I'm really disappointed they're as terrible as they are. Yeah, Sergio was cut from my team. He's no longer with the Googs. We've severed our affiliation with him.
You've decided that it's best for both parties to step away?
Well, his... I don't even want to talk about him.
He blew a save.
He makes me angry.
He blew a save earlier, 2 saves. And then he like stepped away from the team for a while. I think somebody had a baby, maybe.
Yeah, he's not with the
family
team.
Issues.
So he's left me with a -7 as I'm waiting for him to get back from some...
And in our league, you only have to have one relief pitcher, and so there's somebody else out there probably.
There already is. I picked up Javi Guerra.
Yeah, so congratulations on that.
Yeah.
Is he playing this week or is it for next week?
It's for next week.
Yeah, so Jesse wanted to drive out there and do something to Sergio, but... You don't have to say it.
If I wasn't broke, I would have flown to Toronto and vandalized his car. Found his car in the parking lot and vandalized it. But obviously, I'm not going to do that. It's just fantasy baseball. But
I was pretty
livid. I think it was a couple nights ago. It was this week. And he came back and got me some points. So it's at least I don't have a -14 up there anymore.
One of the fun things about having a league in CBS Sports is that you get to have this trash talk area. And it's like this league chat. And it just kind of, you can post whatever you want on there. But it's like a, it's like a chat room rather than like a message board.
A chat room that never goes away.
That never goes away. So it just is continually logging everything that you write for all season. And so you can go back and see what somebody wrote about somebody else.
It drops off.
Well, right. Yeah. But you probably could go back and find it somewhere, right? Or not. It doesn't save it.
I don't think
for
you
perpetuity.
Can.
Okay. Well, it's fun to have. Okay. That's my point.
It's kind of a free. It's less official than the message board.
The other nice feature on CBS League is that you get to write a little write up, and so we'll look forward to taking a look at those and maybe even posting a few of them on Fansmanship if they're entertaining enough. I think.
Oh, the weekly recaps.
Yeah, it would be fun. Jesse's going to have a Trash Talker of the Week weekly recap.
And we already have a front runner.
and our leagues that we're in, the two are obviously the Silky Johnson and Buck Nasty divisions. So you know, player hating and trash talking is something that we're really trying to perpetuate here. Apparently,
I think that this, you know, a lot of fantasy baseball team or leagues have message boards, and it just kind of goes silent. I'm in a league like that right now where there hasn't been anything posted for 2 weeks, and it's just not as fun.
You gotta talk some trash.
Yeah, when there's conversation and there's dialogue between all the players, it's much more entertaining, and I think we've fulfilled the goal of that, and that's there's just constant chatter.
Yeah. I also wanted to talk about it since we went to that we saw the movie together with Evan We went and saw the Hunger Games this week. Took a little break from daily life, and was that Wednesday night?
Tuesday night, because you guys got rained out for your softball.
Right. So Tuesday night we went and saw that movie, and I wrote an article about it on fansmanship.com. But the thing that was going through my head the entire time, and I couldn't stop thinking about it, was that all these people need is baseball and fantasy, or sports and fantasy sports. And if they just had sports and fantasy sports in this future wilderness land that had, you know, that forced them to kill 12 to 18 year olds every year. And if you haven't read The Hunger Games, don't worry. I'm not ruining it for you. If you haven't seen the movie, there's a competition. That's what The Hunger Games are, between 12 to 18 year old boys and girls. And the fans are crazy. And one of the things that I really noticed, in the movie was a point that they were kind of driving home as far as our society. And we talk about sports as a mirror for culture sometimes. And one of the things that I noticed and I wanted to write about was this idea that the fans of the Hunger Games aren't that far away from like NFL fans. Raider fans stabbing each other is one, you know, prime example. Raider fan stabbing Charger fan, seemingly it's a yearly thing, or 49er fan and Raider fan. And fan riots. All you have to do is type in soccer riots on YouTube to see how passionate some of these fans are. And it kind of makes you wonder, and I think this is one of the points of the movie and the book, it makes you wonder if there really was a Hunger Games, how many people would actually be fans of it? Of course, there would be people that were outraged, but I don't think we're that far away from having people.
You know,
I know there's a line.
Having someone dying is not that far from being voted off the island. It's, you know, it's not that long of a stretch.
So this is what I'm saying. So, you know, this idea that we're so far above that, so far evolved above anything that's even close to that. Of course, it's not going to happen, but I think we're closer to that than we think as far as being fans sometimes. And it does make you take a step back and realize that, you know what?
I'm not really going to fly to Toronto and vandalize Sergio Santos's car.
Precisely. And not only that, not only that, we're getting an opportunity to do a lot of the same kinds of, I guess, venting or whatever as fans, but people don't have to die about it, I guess, was kind of an end, like, thankful thing, or thing that I'm thankful for, I guess, after seeing The Hunger Games. So The Hunger Games is a fun movie. You can go check it out if you want
to. Until the last one third.
they went in the cave, and Jesse said, "This is when it goes to hell." And indeed, it did.
Yeah, it was awesome until then, though. Although the camera work was, I'm tired of.
Tell me about the special effects, Jesse.
Yeah. So when you have a movie that you have that has this huge built-in fan base, it's already been a New York Times bestseller.
It's going to make 100, you know, 200, 500 million.
And it's so offensive to me, and it makes me so angry that you have these movies, and they know that it's going to make tons of money, and they hire a cut-rate director, and they put up special effects from a Super Nintendo.
A woebegone era.
Yeah. It's like, come on.
Jesse described the special effects as like cross between Jurassic Park and...
No. I said Jurassic Park makes that movie look ridiculous. You know, Jurassic Park's from the mid-90s, and it was infinitely better and more terrifying than what they had. You know, it was relying on surprise, and then once you see what... if you're going to have that bad of special effects, go the route of like Alien and don't show the creature until the very end or something. But, yeah. It's so ridiculous that, you know, you're going to have a budget of $40 for our special effects, and you know you're going to make $450 or $1 million on the opening weekend.
Which baseball player most looks like a special effect when he plays the game?
I think you're going with Ryan Braun here.
Yeah, I agree. I agree. His swing is so long and his eyes are so big and googly that... that I definitely can't argue with that. I'm trying to think other guys. Randy Johnson, I guess, when he was
pitching.
Randy
Johnson was a pretty strange-looking guy.
Back in the
day. He has a terrible name, too.
It was a special effect. Who else you got? There's got to be a couple others. I guess Lincecum, because he torques his body like he does.
Yeah, whenever you have the guys that have the strange antics. You know, Lenny Dykstra to me was always John, the Phillies from the
Nails.
The John Kruk Phillies.
Dykstra, Dalton, Kruk.
Yeah, they were also dirty and
Mitch
slow.
Williams. Yeah. Kurt Schilling.
Mitch Williams with his mullet perm.
Permamule.
Yeah, that was that's pretty video. You know, you can't capture that.
You can't capture that. That's that's something you have to see to believe.
Yeah.
Matt Kemp, I think, for how easily he hits the ball the opposite way, especially,
Yeah, I guess there's the other end of the spectrum when you have the guys that are so good that it just doesn't even look like
a special effect.
Yeah, there doesn't even look like they're working.
So I did get to spend some time at spring training, and when you're at spring training, you see the difference between a major league guy and a minor league guy because they're both playing the same game. And the major league guy, when he hits it, the ball just, and I hate to sound like a 1940s scout, but the ball just like looks different and sounds different and acts different off his bat. And that's why he's a major league player, right? Like Hosmer played in the Royals game that we saw. And it was like Hosmer, Moustakas, and Billy Butler were like the three starters that played for the Royals that day in the field, generally speaking, who played most of the game. And those guys hit balls that you're like, okay, now I'm watching a major league game. And then like maybe the seventh inning, the reserves came in and it was like, okay, now I'm watching a minor league game. It was very easy to tell. And I think that's part of the fun too of fantasy is which guys are going to make that jump from one to the other, one to the next. Who's the guy on your team who's pleased you the most starting off the year? Who's been a pleasant surprise, Jesse?
I was really worried about my pitching staff after looking at it, but even though I'm 0-2 and my pitching staff is 1-3 for the week, I feel a lot better about it. I've been pleasantly.
Who's your best pitcher?
Kershaw.
Okay.
But, you know, after Kershaw and Weaver, who are my two keepers, the guys.
And Kershaw is a third year keeper now.
Yeah, I'm gonna have to do
something. Kershaw for Hernandez, straight up. Yeah, yes or no?
I do like that because he's, you know, I like the age.
They're the same. Yeah, they're really similar.
Same age, and Hernandez, you pretty much know what you're gonna get.
Felix has 5 strikeouts in 5 innings today.
Yeah, in 3 years he'll still only be 29. So there's a lot of reasons to do that trade.
Right now.
No, I'm not gonna commit to it. No, I'm not gonna do that. You know, Derek Holland has come out and pitched pretty well to start the season. I actually feel good about leaving him in my lineup every week.
Yeah, the Rangers.
Jordan Zimmermann with the Nationals has come out.
He was pitching today.
He pitched great today and got a no decision. But
I watched part of it on my DirecTV package.
Yeah, he only gave up one run in 7 innings and struck out 4 with 1 walk and got a no decision. But pitched well.
Okay, Felix Hernandez is playing Oakland again. I think this is the third time he's pitched against the A's already this year.
They're pumping up his stats.
Seriously? No. He's losing 2-0. But really? They're playing the A's like every
Who's
day?
Who's pitching for the A's? The Mariners have a triple-A offense anyway.
Yeah, they're horrible. Yeah. Mariners are 4-4. The A's are 3-4.
I'm surprised at... I knew that Cespedes...
Colon is pitching for the A's.
Really?
Bartolo.
He's still around.
Colon.
What is he like? 60, he's like Jamie Moyer age.
Yeah, and he weighs twice as much.
There was actually some...
Whoa. What's going on?
Sounds like someone's trying to get some ad. If we're going to do that, we might as well get some...
No, we're good. What? Some...
Technical difficulties.
Yeah.
Go ahead. Was I saying? Oh, yeah. Cespedes.
Yeah. Cespedes? For the A's? Cespedes?
I think it's Cespedes.
I don't think there's a U. Let me look.
There isn't a U. It's with an E, but...
Cespedes. You think it's Cespedes?
Yeah, I don't know. We can ask Andy.
Yeah. Andy? Why would Andy
Dova.
Know? Oh, there you go.
I'm surprised at how all or nothing he is.
Cespedes?
Yeah.
You thought he'd maybe hit some singles from time to time?
Something.
0-3 tonight.
Yeah, he's basically, if you go to the game and he's up to bat, don't leave because he's either going to hit a home run or strike out.
Huh? One or the other.
He's a true outcome player.
Yeah, I feel that way about Teixeira a lot of the time.
Oh, really?
He doesn't get a lot of singles either. Okay, well, for me, the overperforming player that I'm really pleased about so far is D. Gordon. I really hope that he can kind of keep on the same track that he's on. I'm also pretty happy with the production I've got out of Ethier.
Yeah.
And I think Ethier has the potential to have
a
real breakout year. We'll see if he can stay healthy all year.
I think, Austin Jackson, who you had and dropped and then I picked up, has gotten off to a terrific start.
He has, yeah. And I kind of, you know, so my team looked very different when I drafted than the team that I have now. I could have Elvis Andrews and Austin Jackson and not have Matt Kemp and, you know, not have Ethier. Excuse me, not have Braun, not have Ethier, still have Kemp. But I really feel like my team's not any worse than they were. And, so Ethier's one. A guy who hasn't done as well as I'd hoped, especially this week, is Lucas Duda. 0-3.
Yeah, he's falling off.
0-3 today, and he's hitting like 100 or so.
Yeah, he's not so good against the left-handed pitchers.
So that's what we're finding out. And there's another guy. I didn't picture him left-handed. I didn't see him play last year. I pictured him right-handed.
And Duda?
So, yeah, Duda, yeah. So you see this guy, you know, because he's like a first baseman, third baseman, outfielder.
He's a first baseman outfielder. I don't think he plays third.
Okay. Anyway, he's a corner. He's corner infield on my team. Mm-hmm. I was hoping that the fences in last week he had two big homers in one game and I was feeling really good, but those are basically the only two hits he's got all year so far. So I'm hoping he's been facing all left-handed pitchers this year or this week. He faced Cliff Lee today. I'm thinking about maybe trading Felix straight up for Cliff Lee. So I'd rather trade him for Kershaw.
Thanks for that heads up.
Yeah.
Andy's trying to place against each other.
One of us is going to be SOL.
There's other pitchers
careful.
In the league. Anyway, Logan Morrison has been
Lomo.
A disappointment.
Really?
Yes.
He's an outfielder, right? For the Marlins?
Yeah, he's a terrific player when he's out on the field, but...
What's up with the Marlins' new stadium? I saw it
pretty
today.
Pretty gimmicky, right?
It's like a little bit too bright, a little bit too like early 90s feel. I don't really know how to describe it. It's different. They're going to have a home field advantage there after a while.
It's so ridiculous.
It's not going to be
this
year.
It's like playing at a kids' children's
museum. It's like bright in there, and like I feel like I'd go in there and be so visually distracted as an opposing player because I wasn't used to it that it might affect me somehow. I think they're going
to
have a real home field.
I think is the word that comes to mind, and I feel the same way about their new logo and pretty much...
Did you see that thing?
Ozzy's whole shtick that he's got going.
And we talked about that the other day on our Fansmanship podcast about baseball. We talked about Ozzy Guillen and him being a doofus, at best a doofus, at worst, really, really poor decision maker.
Yeah, I know what he was. I understand what he was trying to say, but I mean, come on.
I didn't even see the context of what he was saying, so I don't know.
It's so ridiculous. It's just something you don't talk about or say. He's basically said, you know, he said, "Oh, I love Fidel Castro," and that's what everybody's latched onto. But basically, what he's saying is, he wasn't necessarily agreeing with Castro's policies as much as he was saying that he admires Castro for being in power for as long as he has, despite how many people hate him. So he admires him for his resiliency. But, yeah, I mean, it's still a stupid thing to say.
Yeah.
In Miami. Come on.
Yeah.
Come on.
Yeah. Yeah. It's pretty, pretty
with
ill.
The huge Cuban population. I mean,
it's ill-conceived, just, ill-informed.
It's
and,
so beyond. If he'd have said it in Seattle, probably nobody would have noticed.
Yeah. Yeah.
Not like Miami.
No, está bien. What was I thinking before you said that? I was thinking that the Marlins Park, much like the Rockies Park, I think, you're going to get guys who hit really well in there, and you're going to get things that weird things that happen or statistical anomalies for visiting players. I think.
The early returns is it's looking like a pitcher's park.
But you're going to have anomalies for opposing players as far as hitters. And yeah, I mean, it could be a pitcher's park, which is weird. Who builds a pitcher's park these days?
Everybody.
No, I know, but what the heck? What's that about?
Why? Because you win in a pitcher's park.
Do you?
Yes, the team.
St. Louis isn't a pitcher's park, is it?
It's neutral.
It's neutral at best. Okay, so St. Louis is neutral. Who else has won the championship? I guess the Giants are as a pitcher's park.
The team that comes to mind that's won in an extreme hitter's park is the Chicago White Sox in 2005.
Correct.
But
and they played against two in that World Series, the Astros, who were also an extreme hitter's park.
Yeah, well, there's some bailout zones in Minute Maid.
Most of the new parks are, and if I was designing a stadium, and you're the architect here, not me, but if I was designing a new stadium and I wanted fans to really enjoy it there, I would make it more like the Phillies Park than I would the Tigers Park, for instance.
Yeah.
And I've been to the Phillies Park. I haven't been to the Tigers.
The Tigers Park plays huge.
It's
the
huge.
The Twins apparently is playing. Target Field is playing ridiculously huge.
But it wasn't supposed to, right?
It's hard to tell. Just never really know until
you build
it.
And the Mets moved their fences in this year.
And that's why the Mets moved their fences. Yeah. They didn't know how extreme it was going to be.
It looks like Jack Murphy Stadium now, where the fences are moved in from the big walls out there.
Yeah.
They used to truck in the palm trees to make it look like festive for baseball, and then they'd truck out the palm trees for for football games.
I mean, personally, if I was designing a stadium, I would make it with some quirk that you can capitalize. You could build a team around.
Give me an example.
Like Yankee Stadium favors
left-handed hitters.
So, I mean, you can go with something like that, and you can build your team to do well in that.
Right, and then you get CC Sabathia, who's a left-handed pitcher.
If you have a shrewd GM, you can use that to create a team around.
Right,
it's just like the Padres floundered for so long until they finally got speed. They need fast outfielders in that stadium,
and good pitchers. And
they're finally starting to
fly ball pitchers are okay there.
Cameron Maybin out there in the center field. What do you think about starting to do well?
What do you think about Lubke? I traded Worth for him straight up, and I thought, you know, it was kind of an odd trade, kind of a huh. You don't really think about those guys as being, you know, equal. I kind of am hoping that Lubke kind of breaks out the way that a couple other guys have recently for the Padres. What do you think about Lubke?
I think that he's a decent player. I mean, I'm not super excited. He's just one of those. He's another Padres pitcher.
Yeah.
Any Padres pitcher, I feel basically the same, unless it's Jake Peavy from 2007.
Yeah.
You're gonna get a decent
Jake Peavy from 2007. I hate Lincecum or Kane or Sanchez or Baumgartner. Jake Peavy used to come off the mound and yell at guys. He wanted to fight every game.
He had a dominant year,
and he was an NL pitcher too, which is, you know, crazy that he was kind of doing that, and nobody plunked him.
Yeah.
I don't know. Maybe that was when the Dodgers had somebody who didn't like plunking as their manager or something. But I used to get so fired up at Jake Peavy. Oh man, I was so mad at him for so many times. Go ahead. Sorry, I digress.
Pretty much every Padres pitcher, you're going to get good ERA, decent strikeout numbers, but no wins. That's just the Padres pitchers, and that's the way I feel about Lubke.
Well, that's what the guy who signed with the Dodgers. for a while last year. He was like their fifth starter sometimes, but then he was always hurt. Right-handed pitcher. Starter. Yeah. I don't know.
Anyway. He wasn't memorable.
He was from LA. Now I'm needing to look it up. So every Padres pitcher is like that then for you?
Yeah. There's no one, you know, Clayton Richard.
Do you draft based on ballparks? To what extent do you draft based on ballparks?
I favor NL pitchers, NL strikeout pitchers, based on just the setup of our league. But I don't draft specific to a ballpark. It's if a guy's putting up good numbers, I don't care where he's playing. I'll tend to wait. If I've got guys on my roster, for example, I have Jaime Garcia from the Cardinals, and I'm not going to pitch him in Cincinnati. That's a band box. And Cincinnati is also a good hitting team.
Right. Right.
So
right.
I would never draft a Rockies pitcher. Unless they were, again, super like dominant. Like Ubaldo
from 2 years ago.
The first half, Ubaldo right. from 2 years ago.
Right. The gentleman I was looking for, his name is John Garland.
Oh, yeah.
John Garland is who, the answer.
By the way, has a World Series ring.
Yeah.
And played a particularly important role on that White
Sox.
And
I never understood why the Dodgers didn't do more with him. Maybe he was hurt and they just didn't tell us about it. But the guy seemingly was healthy and they were starting guys like John Eli ahead of him. And other lesser players, in my opinion. I never understood that. I always thought Garland was kind of a gamer that would have brought something to the table. I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong.
I always felt the same way, but he didn't have overpowering stuff.
Right, right. He's I don't think Mark Burley does either, does he?
No, but he's Burley's kind of, a horse.
Right.
He puts up 230 injured, innings
right,
a year.
Right. And Burley's pitching for...
The Marlins.
The Marlins now.
Yeah. Wearing those bright colors.
Yeah. Did you see that the Marlins colors, and we'll leave you on this note with this fantasy baseball podcast on fansmanship.com. The Marlins colors are the exact opposite colors of when they first came in. The reverse negative colors. So if you have a color negative of the Marlins, of a picture of the Marlins from when did they come into the league? 1997? Okay.
No, they won the World Series in 97. So
94?
Somewhere in there, yeah. Mid-90s.
Mid-90s, early 90s. Mm-hmm. If you took those powder blue, the reverse color of that, the exact opposite is the orange. And if you took the black that they have, that they had then, they had black pinstripes. I think they have white ones now or something. Check it out.
Interesting.
Check it out. Look at it, and I don't know if you have any photo
programs.
I wonder
if that was intentional.
Essentially, that's all the guy did who designed them was to just change the colors. It's pretty pretty interesting. Anyway. You can Google it. I saw it the other day. What are you looking for the next couple of weeks? What this fantasy period is always kind of an interesting one, and there's a lot of activity. What happens over the, you know, weeks 3, 4, 5 in fantasy?
Well, I'm, as we know, a tinkerer. I like to fiddle with my team. But, for me, I'm pretty happy. I just need everybody to start hitting and doing what they're doing. Right. You know, you go through my lineup and I feel really good about my team, particularly when I get Ryan Howard in May. I'm offensively going to be a dominant squad. Nobody's really got going. I need, you know, I've got Maurer. He hasn't really done anything yet. Votto's starting to plug along.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I see some ads that came, like Jeff Samardzija, who knew he was going to be the Cubs' second or third starter. He had a tough outing today. Cubs got out, I think, to a 9-0
lead. He got the win.
And, yeah, he gave up, 4 or 5 runs?
He gave up 5 runs.
In 5 innings.
5 innings and struck out 5, I think.
Okay, well, all 5s. We see Bedard. You added him and dropped him. I think he's a player to look out for. I think somebody like Loney is a guy who's not going to come back. But Torii Hunter, who got dropped, I think Sergio Santos, interestingly enough, is a guy I actually considered tinkering with instead of Walden. I considered picking him up and dropping Walden just because the Angels have got off to such a weird start.
Yeah.
But I think the Angels are going to get a lot
Walden
more opportunity.
Walden was sketchy last year.
I know.
And if there's someone, you know, the guy who's intriguing to me, and I'm actually disappointed that they went with this particular player, but... Hector Santiago could be an intriguing player in Chicago.
Hmm.
And he's ignored because nobody saw him came out of nowhere to be the closer.
Danny Espinosa, what happened to him? He didn't start the game that I watched. Is he starting?
Yeah, he's still playing.
Okay. He got dropped by the Cabaltres.
Did he? there's another guy who's off to a ridiculous start is Ian Desmond.
You know, and I drafted Ian Desmond last year, and I thought he was going to be like this great player. And Rocky has him stashed on his bench right now, kind of like I have Freeze stashed on mine. Mm-hmm. I think Desmond's going to see some PT next week and in the future. And I think I have Freeze starting next week as well. The big thing for me in these next few weeks is just to get steady points. I don't really need to worry about my record. The records even themselves out. The last few years, I've really worried about my record. And sometimes other guys just have good games against you, and you just have to know that over the season that's going to even out. And if it doesn't, hopefully it does in the playoffs. I mean, I'm not going to let having a mediocre record affect
Who on your team is at the bottom of the depth chart for pitching? If you were going to add a pitcher, what guy would you cut?
Would I cut?
Yeah, right now.
Let me bring my team up.
Is it Bud Norris?
Yeah, Bud is one.
I feel like there's a lot of middling pitchers like that are floating like around. Bud Norris. Like Bud, he's not exciting, yeah. But you feel like he's too good to draw.
Because I'm not going to drop Billingsley, Hanson, Felix the Cat, Kennedy, Lubke. Or Santana, yeah, I don't think I dropped Lubke, do you? I mean, Lubke I traded for Worth, and Worth was one of my last hitters. So it's like I was hoping to get above average or, you know, average from Lubke, you know, get some points. But he hasn't shown me much, so I'm going to give him a few more. Bud got some points the first start, even though he didn't win, I think. So we'll see.
I feel like I have a bunch of pitchers that are too good to drop but not good enough to win.
Right?
Like
so like two start guys.
Like Holland.
Like guys that you should have when they have two starts.
If I dropped him, I think he would get snapped up.
Oh, I'd trade him for Norris in a second.
Scherzer, if I dropped him, I think that someone would snap him up.
For a second, I'd snap him up for Norris.
Zimmerman, if I dropped him, I think someone would snap him up.
In a second.
We'll see. Bedard, I didn't really consider a key member. But
yeah.
Jaime Garcia, if I dropped him, I think he'd get snapped up.
Totally.
Sean Markham,
but
if I dropped him, I think he'd get snapped up. But I'm not excited about.
But there's nobody available better than those guys. Well, and that's the thing you have to just kind of be cool with. That you just have to kind of like have it in your head that it's going to be okay. The other thing that I'm finding is that I have, I think, 10 or 11 starts out of my guys next week because of the way the schedule is.
Oh, yeah. So and so
that'll start to even itself out too over the course of the year. So I really hope that, you know, that does even itself out so that I can have a chance. Like this week, I only had 6 starts as opposed to like 10 next week. So
I don't know. It's frustrating for me because I have an active scout team.
So you get to see the comparison every week.
Yeah, and it's frustrating because I look at my scout team and they had a dominant week and I would be winning right now.
Right.
And I go through my scout team, and Chris Sale had a great start. And I'm going to go ahead and just, you know, Randall Delgado had a great start in Atlanta. Jake Peavy had a great start today.
Really? For the Sox? Who's he pitching for?
White Sox.
Yeah, still the Sox.
Wow. He had 6.2 innings, He gave up, he had only 2 hits, oh. 1 walk.
Is he back? Is
Peavy strikeouts.
Back?
He's supposedly healthy.
8 strikeouts, 2 hits, dude.
And a win. 24 points.
Maybe I should drop Norris and pick up Peavy.
Yeah, the other two guys, one of them put up almost 30 points, and I'm not going to mention who that is. And then I've got another guy who's...
We could find out relatively easily if they're not on a team. You want me to just tell you?
Yeah, go for it.
Trying to look it up and tell you who it is.
I think it'll still... It's just like my catchers that'll go under the radar.
30 points? Like Josh Willingham?
No, we're talking about pitchers.
Oh, pitchers. Sorry.
I'm actually, and this is why I love fantasy.
Zito?
Fantasy, yeah, Zito, exactly. Zito, How'd you guess?
you could just said it.
You know, fantasy, it's not Zito. I'm excited for next year. I think we're about to enter a renaissance of one of the thinnest positions at catcher. And I'm excited for next year because there's going to be so many like right now I have Jesus Montero, who's a catcher. Right. I have Joe Mauer as my starter. And I feel like there's nobody that has a weak catcher in the league. If you go through every team.
Yeah. Weeders is doing better.
Not only that, sitting in the free agent pool, there's tons of guys. So, I mean, if you go through the catchers in the league, we got Weeders, Mauer,
Santana. Yeah. So are you saying that my draft of Santana in the first round was
drafting a catcher this early is a terrible, terrible move because there's so many catchers.
I accept your apology in the words of Stephen Colbert.
Brian McCann, yeah. Yadier so Molina.
I've had McCann, and here's
Posey,
the thing.
Montero.
Here's the thing, though. You look. We'll look at the end
Rocky
of the year.
Rocky has the worst catcher with Russell Martin.
One thing we'll look at the end of the year is just what the difference is points-wise. Because really the difference isn't – the idea isn't, you know, that everybody – if everybody's scoring 300 but one guy is scoring 400, that one guy who's scoring 400 is a significant – you know, significantly better. So to look at it in tiers, I'm really interested to see because we think all those guys are going to perform really well. But what does that look like tiers-wise and what is the separation really? I'm interested to see. My bet in drafting Santana was that Santana will play first base sometimes. And I know he did last year a little bit, but not as much this year, at least what's expected. And then that he's going to be, with maybe the exception of McCann, maybe the exception of one or two other guys, Santana's going to be 100, 150, 200 points better.
So what do you project Santana to do this year?
Than half of the league.
What do you project Santana to put up this year then?
You're
drafting him in the first round.
What do we say is elite? I mean, so Matt Kemp was like 500 last year. I'm going to say if he gets like 425 to 450, I would be pretty pleased.
Okay.
And I would say that like 350 is where a lot of those other guys are going to end up, even though we think they're going to end up differently. I think I'm going to be about 100 points better than a lot of the Weeders and Monteros.
Okay.
That's my bet.
I completely understand.
And my point is that at that level, and we're really talking about a third round because we've already kept two or a fifth round, I guess, because we've already kept four guys, and at a fifth round position, me getting a guy who's going to be 100 points better than everybody but two other guys is who were either keepers or who are going to, you know, be drafted. Here's my
problem with that strategy. I completely understand value above mean and selecting a player that dramatically outperforms other players at the position. But let's say you drafted Carlos Santana, and how many points did you say he was going to put up?
Say 425 to 450.
425 to 450. Okay, the pick right behind you is Carlos Gonzalez.
Who put up?
600.
Cargo?
Potentially.
Well, I've had him for the last two years.
He could potentially put up 500 to 600 points.
Right.
So what's the difference? I mean, but if you're taking Santana and getting 425, I'm taking Cargo, and let's say he puts up 450. I've outperformed you by 175 points. Right. And then later I get Weeders who puts up 380.
So you look at those performances across positions. For me, I look at that performance. I have to do the position to position. So I look at the difference. So say Weeders does get 380 and Carlos Santana gets 450. That's 70, right? How well did I get an outfielder in the draft that was 70 points better or worse than Cargo? That's my thought process. It's not the direct difference between the two guys who got drafted in the same round. It's position by position.
I think when you're that early, elite is elite. And the guy who puts up the most points, regardless of position, is
understood,
the guy that you want.
Understood.
Because the fall off from the top tier hitters is significant.
I guess I've had Gonzalez on my team the last few years, and he always seems to get hurt like when
I'm just
I need
picking him because he was behind you.
No, but like a guy like him, I mean I've had him on my team. He's somebody I considered, but I didn't keep him, and there was a reason why I didn't keep him. He gets hurt. He didn't have a great year last year. You know, he lost he's lost some guys hitting around him recently. I mean, he got Kadire. Great. What's Michael Kadire going to do? All right. Well, we're going to wrap it up here. Excited that you listened this long, if you did. And if you didn't, then you can't hear this anyway. So anyway, this is the Fantasy Baseball edition of the Fansmanship Podcast. For more baseball-related items, you can visit fansmanship.com. For Jesse Pereira, I'm Owen Main. We'll catch you next time.
A sweat-stained glitter Simmons wig.